Greetings, this is the Trio of Awesomeness. This is Rachel,
Sabrina,
and Ian,
and this is week 4, and we'll be looking at characterization and character motivation. I almost said motorization, that's not right. So I have Thomas Putnam, and when just, like, looking at his character in general, I think that he's kind of, like, a dynamic character. Because, like, I feel like he's been changing a bit within the first act. Like, at first, like, he was accusing Paris of, like, his daughter being a witch and everything. And then, like, once, like, Johnny Proctor comes in and
It's John Proctor.
John Proctor.
It's okay.
Whenever John Proctor comes in or whatever, he kind of, like, defends, like, Paris's kid as well as his own, you know?
Yeah, I think he could be one of those people that everybody else is in the wrong, but if it's, like, his family, it's like, oh, I'll stand up for him. Because if you're saying, like, you know, his kid or whatever, then immediately it'd be different. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And I feel like that's kind of, like, a change from what we first saw him as.
Yeah, he seemed kind of vicious in the very, very beginning.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Even if he was, you know, out for blood a couple times.
Yeah, I feel like he kind of switched places with Proctor's bit. And then, I think he's also, like, a round character. Because we kind of get a lot of information on him within, like, the first, like, few pages that we learn about his personality and learn that he can kind of be a little bit greedy or arrogant. And we kind of see, like, his greed, like, when, like, with John Proctor, whenever he's, like, going to leave or whatever, do you remember how he was kind of, like, he had to go and get wood to take back to his house, but, like, Thomas Putnam was, like, kind of, like, no, that's my land. Like, you can't take it.
He seems very, controlling of what's his.
He's kind of greedy, I think.
But he also, you know, like you were saying before, just going back for a second, he does seem like a very important character. Like, he's going to have a major role in this. What's going on, because there was that whole, you know, list of paragraphs, like I talked about, that was added last week. There's a whole section just about him.
Yeah, and I think that any character, like, the characters that have those paragraphs seem to be the characters that are the most involved in the text, so.
And I think, like, his character really conflicts with John Proctor's character, just because, like, they both disagree over, like, Reverend Hale coming, because, like, John Proctor doesn't want him coming, and Thomas Putnam's, like, kids are dying, he needs to come.
Right, yeah. I noticed that, too.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't think, like, with Abigail Williams, because I know you're doing Abby, he doesn't really...
Yeah, there's not much there.
There's not much between, yeah, you know what you mean.
But, yeah, he just, he really conflicts with John Proctor. So...
That seems like a great segue to go into Ian talking about John Proctor.
Exactly. So, you know, exactly like you said, I think that John Proctor can pretty much be characterized by the relationship he has with two of the other characters, and that would be Thomas Putnam and Abigail Williams. But first, with Thomas Putnam, like you said, it seems like they're complete opposites in the text. Mm-hmm. It seems like Proctor is a lot more reluctant to jump to the conclusion of witchcraft than Putnam and some of the others are. Because, you know, he's very opposed to Hale coming. And, you know, instead of, you know, being like, oh, of course, Reverend Paris, it's witchcraft, he's like, well, you don't even talk about God in your sermons anymore. He seems a lot less religiously inclined. You know, he says he hasn't been to church much in 5 years. And...
Yeah. Although at the very beginning, it almost seemed like Putnam was kind of, like, really jumping onto witchcraft, you know, like, at the very beginning, like, he was blaming Paris's daughter for being a witch and stuff like that, and...
The beginning, everyone was blaming his daughter for being a witch!
Yeah.
Every character in the world was like, you are a witch.
She's a witch!
But
she's a witch, she's a witch.
I think that the main thing, like, I think John Proctor, like, Thomas Putnam is a round character, because he has those paragraphs dedicated to him and stuff, but I also think that... at least thus far, he seems, I don't know, I know it's kind of different from one of the things you said, but he almost seems to me like he's kind of static, like he hasn't really changed that much. I mean, he just seems kind
Which
of...
Which character?
Proctor. Oh, you're talking about Putnam. No, I agree.
So, Proctor,
She talked about Thomas Putnam. Mm. You're talking about John Proctor. All right.
I think he's dynamic. Bit of confusion here.
Yeah. Yeah, Putnam does seem dynamic, but yeah,
I mean, we've
Proctor
only,
seems...
We're only talking about what happened in the first act. So a lot of the characters really haven't changed yet.
They haven't had an opportunity to change.
It takes time to really build a change in characters.
I think, though, that with John Proctor, one of the main... It seems like because he's opposed to Thomas Putnam, he seems almost like a voice of reason, kind of, because he's, you know, he doesn't, he kind of steps back. He's like, should we really, you know, bring Halen? Should we really be doing this? I think that if he stays opposed to Putnam, then throughout the play, it'll kind of, you know, provide a counterpoint type deal that would probably be you know, beneficial in some way to the plot or something like that. But I also think that if, considering how things turn out, if Miller decides to go and make Proctor undergo some change that makes him, you know, hold the same views as Thomas Putnam, it would kind of have parallels to, you know, the way things were in America at the time, and how even the people who were level-headed and were kind of distrustful of authority kind of jumped on the bandwagon and, you know, started crying witch along with everyone else. So, and after that, you know, the other main thing between people is Proctor and Abigail Williams, when we really don't know there's anything there until all of a sudden it's like, boom, this big confrontation.
She's hanging all over him.
Abigail starts asking for soft words, and then we have a bunch of euphemisms, but we pretty much know what
was
going
down. Exactly.
So I think that, you know, that definitely shows another side of John Proctor, that he was a guy who, he had some moral issues going on.
Considering
when she was, 17 and he was 35, I mean...
At least in the book.
In the book, but not even in real life.
Yeah, because didn't you say that there was
like... She was 11.
She was like 11 and he was like 60 in real life.
So,
that's pretty rocky.
Exactly. So he was a straight up pedophile. And
yes.
That, he definitely had some issues to deal with there.
Yeah.
So I think that makes this a perfect segue into the final segment of our discussion.
All right, so I'm going to talk about Abigail Williams. About Abigail Williams. Now, I think in general, just to like start off, we know the reason she's there is because she is the niece of Reverend Paris.
Mm-hmm.
So she lives there, you know, and that Betty's her cousin and everything, and that's why she's involved. You know, what she has to deal with as far as characterization, like, everybody's accusing her of practicing witchcraft as well. You know, she's not like taken out of that. Everyone's saying she did it too. And her uncle seems kind of angry with her. You know, he's, like, yelling at her in the very beginning. Like, you know this what this is going to do to me, you know. Everybody already doesn't like me, you know, like, with the whole church thing. He's like, how dare you, don't lie to me. Tell me exactly what happened in the woods. And she's like, nothing happened. But then, in later, when Reverend Hale is there, and he's, like, trying to save Tituba, you know, like, bring her back to God, all of a sudden she, like, falls on the floor, and she's like, take me too, blah, wrote and danced with the devil, and I wrote in his book. And I'm like, wait, you did nothing, but now you did everything. And it's like, I think it was almost like she's an attention seeker.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important, because I think she was trying to get the attention. When Tituba had all the attention was on her when she was, like, denying it. They're like, tell us, you know. But as soon as Tituba's like, oh, the attention's on her, she's like, oh, I did it too. Take me. So, I don't know. Did anybody else get that from her?
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think I was quite at that part, but I definitely know what you mean, like, taking that into context, because, like, even at the beginning, when she's first introduced, I mean, she doesn't have paragraphs or anything devoted to her, but we see that it says that she's an orphan, which is why she's living with Paris, and also that it says she's strikingly beautiful. So it seems like, because she's an orphan, I mean, she would naturally, you know, she wouldn't have any attention from her biological parents, so she would want to find it from other people, and the fact that she's, you know, apparently good-looking would make it easier for her to get that attention. And I think that's kind of the reason why she would be prompted to do what she did with Proctor, because it's like, you know...
Why he was prompted to do what he did with her.
She has a lot of issues, because not only was she an orphan, but you tell that she had to work as a servant,
mm-hmm.
because she was working as a servant in the Proctor house, and the wife kicked her out when she noticed something
Isn't
fishy
that
was going
she
on.
Drank the blood that's... when dancing and everything is because she wanted to get rid of his wife or something like that.
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
I know that she, when her and Proctor are having the conversation, the big thing is this, and I took a quote, and it's, He's pretty much saying, I don't want anything to do with you, but she's begging and pleading for the attention. And, you know, she says in there, he says, Abby, I may think of you softly from time to time, but I will cut off my hand before I'll ever reach for you again. Wipe it out of mine. We never touched, Abby. That happened on page 22. Pretty much, no matter what, he's saying that nothing else is going to happen. She's still begging for his attention because all she wants is attention. Mm-hmm. You know, all she was is a servant. Her uncle's still trying to, like, get rid of her. Like, why can't you find another job, you know, as a servant? And it's just not happening.
Back with the John Proctor thing, I found the quote, and it said, Betty was like, you did. You drink a charm to kill John Proctor's wake. You drink a charm to kill Goody Proctor. So I think she...
So obviously, yeah. She just wants whatever it can
to and be with them.
Yeah.
And it seems like we also find out at one point that Proctor's wife is sick, so I mean, I think that probably played
with
it too.
Yeah. She did say something about a sickly wife. But I think that we have mastered the characterization of all these characters, so this is Sabrina.
This is Rachel.
And this is Ian.
Signing off.